The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
Final hour is live. The commissioner will join us, the president of Mississippi State. Right now, we are welcoming you back and talking to Mitch Barnhart, the athletic director at Kentucky. And Mitch, I remember talking to you when you were the men's basketball chair, and I'd forgotten, I guess I shouldn't have, but that's like a job that will end your sanity forever, and then you move right over to the CFP.
Yeah, it's been 5 years on the men's basketball committee. One of the tournaments obviously got canceled because of the COVID, and then we had the one in the bubble, and then went from there to the CFP, and you and I were talking offset. It was the friendships have been fascinating, have been wonderful, just wonderful, and it's been an honor to do both of them. But I have 1 year left, and Paul, when this one's done, I think I'm good.
Yeah,
I think I'm good.
And for those sitting at home, you don't just get you don't volunteer for these. I mean, the distinguished people, and to be on both is an extraordinary honor. But you're probably saying, you know, honor somebody else once in a while.
Yeah, no, it's. I think, you know, when I was on the West Coast, I had the good fortune to be on the baseball committee, so I've seen that lens from Omaha, and it's pretty cool. The men's basketball tournament's a very, very unique, special event in the world of college sports. March Madness, all of that that goes with it. And then you get to college football playoff and completely different look. And you're on the inside of a really, really wonderful thing in the sports world. And so you have a chance to participate in it at a really high level. And so it's been great.
I realize this next question will be impossible to answer. I say that at the front end, but understanding your position on the committee, and you'll go off when we move to the 12-team playoff, some of the debate among the media has been if the SEC ends up landing at the 8 number versus 9 next year, what impact would that have on the CFP? I realize I'm giving you a hypothetical, but it's still something. Yeah. You understand the mechanics of it better than we do.
Well, I think there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle, and when everybody's talking the 8 and the 9, there's lenses everyone's looking at it through the athletic director's lens, or through the lens of the CFP committee member, or there's a lot of different lenses. If, you know, obviously last year we had two teams at 5 and 6 that both had two losses, and I think that from a factual perspective, you also realize when you go to a conference game, you're adding 8 losses to someone in the league. So someone's picking up losses. And so it has strengthened your schedule on one hand. It will also tag losses on the other hand. So there is that ground. Our league has been incredibly successful at putting people in the CFP Final Four. That goes to, obviously, 6 at-large berths went to 12, and that is a unique opportunity for someone to jump into that 6. We've been at Kentucky. We've been close a couple times to sneaking into that top 12. Could we be in that conversation at 9-3 or 10-2 or something like that? Could we? Possibly. So I think the scheduling is critically important to most schools. I think it's been I think our league has done a really, really, really tremendous job of it. And the playing the Autonomy 5 opponent has been a part of that equation. Some people have taken on 2. Different programs have different goals and not goals. They all have an end goal of winning a championship, but they also have a responsibility to schedule intelligently for what they think their program can achieve.
Talking to Mitch Barnhart, obviously, this is a conversation that has dominated the other conversation, and I feel like I got a preview of it about 11 or 12 hours ago. I ran into you this morning. We were talking about NIL, and there's so many different ways to attack it, but as someone who has been an athletic director in prestigious conferences, who has been a part of this on such high levels, is there a way to characterize this moment in time?
Well, I think clearly we need some help. I've listened to the show, and the other athletic directors in our conference have come on your show and talked about the need for congressional help and for help from the federal government, and saying we can't manage this problem. We need some help coming in to get that done. I think that's absolutely factual. I think our responsibility goes beyond NIL. And you and I talked briefly this morning. We were walking down the hallway, and I truly believe that we're talking about generational leadership, and we're talking about generational opportunity, and making sure that we have. I've got 600 student athletes in our program. I have responsibility to all of them, And I think I have, when I have children, I have grandchildren, there's other folks that have got that same situation. They want their young people to have opportunity. And I don't want to lose sight of that. And I think sometimes we get so caught up in the NIL conversation, we forget what that means to everything now. And we just make assumptions that everything will stay static forever in terms of those opportunities. We've got a lot to protect here. A lot of really good things have happened in college. Like, we're getting ready to host a regional for the first time in 6 years at Kentucky in baseball this week. And that hadn't happened for a long time, but I know for those 35 young men in our program, it means an awful lot to them. And they're not in the NIL conversation much in terms of what's going on. So there is a piece of the conversation that needs to happen on a national level, knowing that it affects probably on surface 100, 150 student athletes, probably a little more impactful to them than it is to the other 450 in our program. But I also have a responsibility to them. And for everything that this conference has built, and as strong as this conference has been, and we all talk about it, because it'll get shown on the golf championships and the tennis championships, our young people do remarkable things. And then they're sent out into the world to do really cool things athletically. They're doing really, really cool things in business. And they're unbelievable leaders and family people. And so I think we have a responsibility that far exceeds just talking about NIL.
And finally, you said something to me that struck me this morning. And, you know, we sit here on the show and we talk about the treetop. Mm-hmm. And you were going through some of the different athletes and you used the word, you said, you know, we need to celebrate this and that. And I think too often we just forget that. Yep. I mean, we're not administrators. We're pundits. But it really did strike someone who has, I thought, had really grown cynical. But mention that. I'd like you to address that as we close.
I enjoy celebrating the accomplishments of our young people. We have, as I told you, we've got two world record holders that have come out of our program in the last 5 years in women's track and field. We've got a Bowerman Award winner out of our track and field program last year, Abby Steiner. And those are the kind of things that I think we lose sight of. And we've got an outstanding legacy in our men's basketball program. And Mark Stoops has done an amazing job in football, and all those are wonderful things we want to celebrate. But I could go down the line of our 23 sports programs. I never want to lose sight of that. And there's parents that have entrusted their children to our programs, and I think we got a responsibility to that at a pretty high level. And again, academically, we talk about two things all the time, and I'll leave you this. I know you got the main man coming. I don't want to stand in his way. I'm a warm up act for the commissioner. But I would say, you know, we talk about an awful lot. Two words: education and competition. And I've stressed that with our staff. I've stressed that with our coaches. I want to put diplomas in hands and rings on fingers. And if we do those two things incredibly well, we're going to create the things generationally going forward that are important. I think sometimes we look at the lens at 3 to 4 years and we think, well, that's the landscape. The landscape is deeper than that. If we limit it to that, that's really shame on us.
That's fantastic. I'm so glad you were able to amplify that from what I heard, because I wanted the audience to hear that. Mitch Barnhart, thank you. Thank you very, very much. Enjoy the football season as much as you can.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
We'll take a break. The commissioner will join us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We welcome you back as one of our staples as we wind down our two-day visit here at the Hilton Sandestin Beach in Miramar Beach. The commissioner of the Southeastern Conference joining us. Myriad of questions have been asked to countless guests about what's been going on all week. I figured it'd make more sense to ask you. What can you share with us?
A few categories. One, we have just the standard business, talk about the year, revenue, TV ratings, which were actually really good news when we visit with our ESPN colleagues. A little bit about planning ahead. You've seen other conferences talk about access points for TV around football games, so we have those conversations. Frustrations with kind of the transfer culture, the notion of state-by-state name, image, and likeness, wanting a national standard, interaction with our student-athletes. The football scheduling thing, I don't know if you've heard, is a bit of a conversation topic. We also have continuing dialogue around event security and those circumstances where fans enter the field. Our coaches groups meet on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then we finish our Wednesday afternoon with a set of reports, what's on the mind from our football coaches. The football coaches did a nice job talking through some of the stress points in the recruiting calendar and asked for some attention there. Basketball coaches talk through the NCAA summer initiative that exists. Should there be an opportunity on the men's side or the women's side for a little bit of exhibition play in the summertime? They too talked about, recruiting, the timing. Is there a chance to have a break? You come right out of the season, then you're trying to manage your roster from a transfer standpoint. Some are still trying to play in the NCAA tournament, and believe it or not, that and a little few more items can fill up an agenda. We had a visit from Chris Womack, who is the CEO of Southern Company.
Sure.
As we try to think about meeting our obligations for people and culture, how do we grow from a diversity standpoint, listening to his story and his leadership journey, but also having him challenge us and our thinking was a really healthy way to start our Wednesday.
No, he's a phenomenal person. Talking to the commissioner here, I've asked the same question to all these people about the schedule, and you addressed it before we even began down here. Can you give us the timetable, how this is going to play out the rest of the week with the 8-9?
Yeah, sure. We'll continue the conversation tomorrow with our athletics directors and our presidents. If we coalesce around a recommendation, we're prepared to introduce that. As soon as we reach a finish line, I'll end up announcing and explaining that in a pretty timely manner. Thursday or Friday, the sooner the better. If we don't come to an agreement, a conclusion, either on short-term or long-term, and we have options.
Okay.
We don't have to solve every one of our scheduling format questions for eternity right now. And remember that really, in February, we learn of the ability for Oklahoma and Texas to move earlier. I've noted some complexities around that. Certainly, just walking away from 14 non-conference games, were we to go to 9, it's been part of the conversation. So a lot of healthy dialogue. I tend to think we'll come to resolution on some key elements in the short term, continue talking long term. I will say, from my perspective, it's been the kind of healthy conversation we ought to have as a conference. A lot of different perspectives. No need to raise the volume, but continually, ask the right questions and think about how we schedule our football games. Also, how we announce the scheduling of our football games. You saw the NFL just 3 weeks ago. They make an event. And last year we announced our schedule in mid-September. We're already making news in football, but a lot of pressure to get it out. So we're trying to reconfigure that thinking as well.
I think that would be a pretty entertaining evening.
It would be. And you try to find a time when people aren't talking about football. We don't have right. basketball games taking place. Just to extend the conversation with intent about our football. And so not only how we schedule, but when we talk about the schedule has been part of our dialogue.
Some of the pundits, and I realize your job is not to respond to the pundits, but are concerned about this factor. If it ends up being 8 and we move to 12 in the CFP next year, whether that will be held against the league, even if it's in a short-term situation?
Well, I think we ended that football season with a 65-7 win in the National Championship
remember that night.
Game. And if the indictment somehow is going to be that we don't play the highest level of college football, then somebody's not actually watching football games. And we're at 8, but we have a requirement that you play an additional game against a non-conference opponent from one of our colleague conferences, or major independent. The major independent numbers are changing right now. The 8 format arguably has worked really well as the helicopter goes by. The 9 format can work really well. So I think pundits, coaches, analytics people can make a bunch of different arguments, but I actually think either one of those models will keep us very secure in the college football playoff consideration. By the way, we've done some of that analytics work, too, to try to figure out what it might mean.
That's interesting, yeah, because I think you start getting past some of the obvious conversations, and that's really what matters in regard to the bigger picture. Obviously, the postseason matters, too, for your schools.
It does, and part of our current approach allows a range of scheduling models. So we've had teams that will play our 8-game conference schedule and then 2 more from Autonomy 5 conferences, so that's 10 of their 12 games. Others will just meet that 9-game standard. They're thinking about bowl eligibility, that 6-6 threshold. And one of the things that has been part of the conversation is our 8-game conference schedule allows that flexibility. Now, as we grow, we're going to have to think differently. And when I talk about, debate and trying to understand and asking the right questions, the source of those questions has been, well, how is this going to impact college football playoff eligibility? How is this going to impact bowl eligibility and winning season if you're at 8 or 9 games? We continue to think, and one of the reasons to think about maybe short-term decision is to think about the college football playoff as it's onboarded. And there's a lot more work to be done there. That learning cycle might continue, and that might be advantageous for us.
As we move toward that playoff, I know the finances are always a part of it, but I'm just wondering, as the CFP gets negotiated, the dominance of this conference, and the Big Ten has certainly played a role, has been paramount, and I'm not trying to go back to the ACC meetings from a week or two ago to steal an idea, but it just seems that the SEC deserves a bigger portion maybe than has even been discussed so far.
Well, we're in the midst of a 12-year set of agreements. We have not even begun to think. Well, we've begun to think, but really the planning and the work and the debate about what it looks like in year 13. And you introduced an interesting concept, not one with which I disagree. So we have a great deal of work in front of us just to formulate the expansion. I think if you look at the history of college football playoff, we're the only conference that's been present in each of the 14 playoffs. We're one of 2 conferences to have 2 members participate, and the only one when that's happened to have I guess either member advanced. Both times we've had the national championship game. The Big Ten obviously had the semifinalists. You have Notre Dame played in that ACC configuration during COVID. I think clearly our strength has been on display. We've had 3 different national champions. We've won 6 of the 9. I could go on, and people outside the SEC will be tired of hearing it.
Go on.
Inside the SEC will be pleased to hear more and more. I do think we've established ourselves in a unique way. There was some recognition of that in the last onboarding of a change in the postseason. We went from the BCS to the CFP. And we'll have a conversation about what that might mean in the future.
Another perception out there, it's not a perception, I think it's a reality, at least among the people that sit on my side, about the what has happened to college athletics, where you know, there was this phrase, the Power Five, the Autonomy Five, whatever it was, and now you hear the Big Two. I know that's not, your job is on one level this league, but you're also at the vanguard of everything else in intercollegiate athletics. I'm not asking you if that's a bad thing, but what are your thoughts on the way things have shaped out?
Well, we talk not only about our own perspective, but our responsibility as well. We want to be successful, and I was on a baseball tournament interview on ESPN2 Sunday being asked about the possibility of 8 host sites of the 16, and that's disproportionate. I think we've earned that. Our school is scheduled. They've built facilities. They provide incredible environments throughout the regular season. And I've referenced New Jersey Institute of Technology playing in Fayetteville a few years ago. Those guys, yeah, they were 4-seed, but they were like local heroes by the end of the weekend. We want to be successful, but we also know that we bring a lot to the table. Whether people use different labels, you know, my colleague Mike Oresco, who's been on, wrote a almost 3,000 word missive on we shouldn't use these P5 labels. Well, you know, I'm not the one that labeled my conference P6, and I'm not the one who labeled the group in which we're classified as a Power Five. I think we've tried to make decisions that are right for the Southeastern Conference. I understand why this recognition of the two between the SEC and the Big Ten because of economics. I look forward to working with Tony Petitti closely moving forward, but we all need to work together. I think it's interesting right now within the Room of Five that, you know, our expansion was pretty quick. It was media day, and 10 days later is an invitation. The Big Ten was a bit of a surprise last year, but fairly quick. We've had some lingering issues where conferences are talking about other conferences, and you would hope that you know, I'm a fan of stability at this point, but that's self-interest. We could make those decisions and move on because that does create stress in how people work together.
I saw you 3 weeks ago, and you were heading to give a commencement speech. I understand you're now Dr. Sankey.
Utica University. And so thank you to the folks there. You know, one of the interesting parts of, like, my story is applying to a classified ad in the Syracuse Herald American, the Sunday newspaper in Syracuse, New York. I didn't know anybody and was offered this job. That resulted in earning my master's degree. And then, you know, this connection with Mike Slive, who we were at a reception years later. And as I was preparing to make those remarks, really, it wasn't but 8 years after leaving the intramural director's job that I was a conference commissioner in the Southland Conference. And so he and I were at an event. I was telling my story, and he's like, I was born and raised in Utica, New York. So it was really fun to go back there to say thank you for the start they provided me. They honored me with an honorary doctoral degree to deliver commencement remarks and kind of travel around the city a little bit where, you know, 30-plus years ago my career began.
Well, I know you have a media to meet with, but we thank you, Commissioner Dr. Sankey. Thank you for gracing us. Thank you.
I've told my family that's what they should be called. So I'm just going to add this to the list of credibility factors.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. The president of Mississippi State, Mark Keenan, will join us shortly.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We welcome all of you back, and it's so great to welcome the president at Mississippi State as we have our final 30 minutes. Dr. Mark Keenum joining us. And Dr. Keenum, we've talked to you since through the television. But the last time we sat together, I think we were in Starkville. You had a tuxedo on. You're about to go escort your daughter to homecoming, and I've been afraid to ask how that went.
It went wonderful. Yeah, I had on my tux, my maroon tie and cummerbund, and went to escort my daughter for her homecoming pageant and at the football game, and she was named homecoming queen.
I'm breathing a sigh of relief because I've been afraid to ask ever since.
Yeah,
you don't want to say Dr. Keenum had a go. Well, she had a great time. She was in the court.
Yes, yeah, we didn't know. That's how they do it. You escort your daughters out on the homecoming maids, and then they select the queen, and that was part of the crowning. And
I know you had a lot of big moments in your life and career. I would imagine you were holding your breath right then.
Well, yeah, you know, I was just so proud of her for being in the, you know, the homecoming court, and Katie, our oldest daughter, Katie. But it was special. It was a wonderful father-daughter experience.
That's great.
And I was just, you know, it's one of those special evenings.
No, it was.
And you were part of it.
I've never had a
send-off.
But it was great. Well, thank you so much for making time. I know you're under the gun, and there's so many things happening. I would like to talk to some of the issues here and elsewhere. First, the NIL issue. I know you had a prior career in Washington. You know the ways around that town.
Well,
and that seems to be a destination point for a lot of key people like you that are trying to get some help.
Well, since the whole name, image, and likeness came into light, if you will, about, I think we're in our third year of NIL,
right.
It has totally evolved. And even going back to when the whole concept was coming out, and I support NIL, don't get me wrong. I think student-athletes should have an opportunity to use their name or their image or likeness to get additional financial support while they're student-athlete at an institution. But it is morphed beyond, I think, the original idea and concept. And so you've got states now, and Mississippi, we've had legislation enacted in our state, legislature. You know, we have two SEC schools in Mississippi, Mississippi State and University of Mississippi. And so we went to our legislative leaders back when this whole NIL started coming out, and we got some state legislation enacted. And then a year later, we went back and had it amended, to allow our institutions to be able to work with student athletes and making decisions and fulfilling their contractual obligations. And the way we had it set up, we couldn't even consult. We were total arm length. We couldn't have any consultation with an athlete. Well, athletes want guidance. They need support. Now what we've seen is other states have taken it even further and have enacted legislation that will allow states to allow high school students, while they're still a high school student, to receive an NIL benefit while they're still in high school, before they have even enrolled in an institution, if they sign a letter of intent with a university within that state. You've got institutions that have their fundraising arm that they've set up totally separate from the institution. They allow donors to make contributions to a collective or an initiative for NIL. And get priority points for season tickets or parking and all kind of perks that come with that. We can't do that in Mississippi, for example. And then also states that allow those donations to be tax deductible and how their fundraising arm is set up. And we're not set up like that either. And I would think that I know they're doing everything legal in the way they think is the best for their university. They're also federal implications with the IRS and what's an acceptable donation that's tax deductible and how those monies are being used and are they being used to just pay players. So I do think that, like so many things in our country, you know, we have 50 states and you can't have 50 different sets of rules governing name, image, and likeness. You just can't. We compete in all the other states. And just like we have commerce across state lines, we have interstate commerce laws that govern how states and how citizens can do commerce across state lines. We need some type of a federal preemption that can overlay guidance and guidelines on what's acceptable, what's allowable and not, and then have some structure in place to enforce it and govern it. What that looks like, I don't know. But I do think it's time for Congress. And look, we've been talking with Congress. We've worked with Congress. We, Mississippi State, University of Mississippi, with our congressional delegation. And they have been very receptive and have offered, introduced bills mm-hmm. into the Congress. And we're working very hand in glove with the Southeastern Conference, with my colleagues. And we're going to continue to do this. In fact, I'll be in Washington next week with Commissioner Sankey and quite a number of other presidents and chancellors and athletics directors and coaches, and we're having what we call the SEC on the Hill. It'll be a big event, reception for all the congressional delegations from our 11-state footprint, and with Oklahoma coming to join our conference, we'll have 12 states represented in Congress in the Southeastern Conference. But to give us an opportunity to further highlight the need for federal preemption from this whole issue of NIL, to have some sense of governance and fairness across college athletics in our country, it is sorely needed.
Dr. Keating, you understand Washington. You've worked there. Both you and your wife spent a lot of time there. The cynicism, the skepticism, it's easy to say, it's commonplace, it's punditry, but knowing the mechanics of that city and what happens there, realistically, what do you hope to accomplish?
Well, you know, it's like everything, it's give and take. You know, we have a very small microcosm of that here. You know, we're here, SEC presidents and athletics directors and coaches, and we have legislation that we're going to be voting on Friday. And so we'll spend time sitting around the table tomorrow and Friday discussing policy issues for the league. And like so many things, there's got to be give and take. And that's where the presidents and chancellors come in to do that final negotiation. Okay. But at the end of the day, we vote. You put it on the table and we have a vote. And we have a good league. It's a very collegial conference where we genuinely get along with one another. We have differences, but we all respect this conference and how wonderful it is and the impact it's having on student athletes and our home states and our campuses. And so we genuinely want to work together. But at the end of the day, as we like to say, when we walk out of that room, we were unanimous in whatever the decision is. Even if there's a split vote, at the end of the day, we're going to be unanimous. We're getting consensus on something like name, image, and likeness in Washington right now, and this politically charged environment. It's going to be a challenge, and I get that. And you've got members of Congress that are coming at it from a different perspective, that they want to see student athletes be categorized as employees.
Right.
And allow them to be unionized and all that goes into that. And I think that would be the very unhealthy outcome of allowing students to become employees. That sets a whole different set of relationships between institutions and the athletes. These are students, and I look at them first and foremost as students. They're getting a great education to equip them and prepare them for the rest of their life. They're well provided for, well cared for, all the their wants, their education, their housing, their meals, and health care, and counseling, and support, and training, and clothing, and stipends, and you have within the SEC our willingness to even provide more support. But what we see now is something in the NIL where it's completely unregulated, sky's the limit. And whatever you can go out and raise money to pay players, and that's not a healthy environment. Categorizing players, athletes as employees is not a healthy solution to this either. They want to be students. And we want to be there to help support them to get their degree, to get their education, to equip them, as I said, to be productive citizens, because, you know, 99% or so of our student athletes, when they finish playing their college days, that for most, that's it. And we want them to be well prepared to be productive and have a great life.
We just have a moment left, and this is, unfortunately, in the final minute or two, this is maybe not all that fair of a question, but you mentioned the voting, and it, you've been busy running a university and all the things that you do, including your leadership with the CFP. This man, I think, made the 12-team playoff possible. I know you've given credit to everybody else, but my question is this. In a minute or two, I know this is difficult, but where are we going with this debate about this endless debate here, and maybe not in your room, but between 8 and 9 games?
Oh, on scheduling? You know, we are making a big transition with the college football playoff expansion, and that's going to impact, I think, what we decide in the room on going from 8 to 9 games. We're putting a lot more on our players, on our student athletes. You know, we know for sure to make it all the way to the final game, our student athletes will have to play at least one more game. Some schools, possibly 2 more games. Right. And to add a 9th conference game, you know, that puts a lot more pressure, I think, on these student athletes. But, you know, you look at the success that our conference has, the Southeastern Conference, and during the CFP era, the SEC's done pretty well.
Yes.
And we play an 8-game schedule right now. So, you know, we're doing well. We're competing. We're in the playoffs. Our schools are winning the national championship pretty consistently. And so I will listen to the commissioner. I will listen to the facts as they are laid on the table for the rationale for going to 9 games. But, you know, 8 games is working pretty well right now, in my opinion. But like I said, we'll work through this, and I will really pay close attention to the facts and to our commissioner, who's doing an outstanding job.
And finally, you know, he has been, you know, moving the conference to a direction. Just the big picture here in the remaining minute, because there's so much chaos everywhere, including in conferences. With, you know, the SEC and the Big Ten took a lot of heat, but now everyone seems to be scrambling. But these two leagues.
Well, how wonderful it is for us to have our big annual league conference meeting, and unlike other conferences across the country, the biggest topic at our conference is 8 games versus 9 games for entering for our interconference competition. You know, I think that's a sign of a very healthy athletic conference. If that's the biggest issue that
versus checking
doing.
Outside to see if another conference is trying to take one of your members.
True. Or you're trying to dissolve possibly your conference or other factors. And, you know, I'm not to disparage any other conference, but we got a lot of great things happening here in the SEC, and we've got great leadership team. Commissioner Sankey's the best, and we're so fortunate and blessed to have him.
And I know you're not going to like this, but I feel the same about you, because I know the impact, the influence that you have not only here, but on intercollegiate athletics and academia in general.
You're very kind, my friend.
Thank you. President Mark Keenum, thank you so much for being here. It's always a pleasure to see you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Back for the final few seconds right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.